The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We have a very special guest today. We've had him on a few times, and I always enjoy having him on because he's a personal friend and a mentor of mine. He's someone that I follow religiously. His name is Harry Dent, world-renowned economist who studies demographics and historic trends. Basically, he's much more than that. I think he is the foremost demographic economist in the world, and that's in my opinion. He's the developer of the Dent Method, an economic forecasting approach that, based on the changes in demographics trends. In his book, The Great Boom Ahead, which I've talked about a lot on this show, when I talked to you about that chart, this is the book it came from. It was published in 1992. He stood virtually alone in forecasting the unanticipated boom of the 1990s, and so it's a pleasure to welcome Harry Dent to the show today. Good morning, Harry.
Well, hi, Mike. Nice to be back.
All right. It's great to have you here. All right. I guess we should start out with some of these questions, kind of get them out of the way. But for about 24 hours now, starting on yesterday's show, we have a couple of questions to ask you. So,
and one of them started yesterday with one of our favorite listeners, Bob from Houston. And Bob was listening to the show, and you made a call on JCPenney. And he says, thank you very, very much, because it was profitable for him. And he'd like to know what you see the future now going forward.
Well, you know, that's kind of tough now that Ackerman got out of that, which was good for JCPenney, and it's probably going to go up near term, but, you know, I am worried about stocks probably starting around January of the new year. I think that the first half of next year is the most dangerous time I see for stocks in general in my cycles, and so I would be worried then. So right now I'd say, yeah, JCPenney's probably good, but I don't like many stocks after, say, mid-January of next year.
So you think we could have a fall rally here coming off of, September is usually the worst month of the year historically, and some people are saying that we could have a fall rally, and others saying, you know, look at the numbers, we're up already almost enough for 2 years. What do you think? You think we're going to go flat for the remainder of the year, or do you think we're going to get a little rally?
Yeah, I think it's kind of sideways and then up. The Dow is going up in kind of a channel with 14,000 is the downside in September, October, and I think stocks probably will go down with the debt ceiling debate and a few other things, and then I think they'll probably go up towards the upside of this channel around 16,000 or a little bit higher on the Dow. And then I think that's about it. I think the Fed is kind of in what I call a checkmate position, where if the economy gets a little better, they're going to have to taper their stimulus. And if it doesn't get better, which is the flip side, it means the stimulus isn't working anymore. So we've been waiting for this for a long time. You know, the Fed has been stimulating the economy unbelievably, China, Japan as well, and I think we're getting to the point where there's not much upside, but I still think stocks will tend to go up until something goes wrong, and I'll tell you, the biggest thing that's going to go wrong in the world is Southern Europe and Spain is going to have further problems, and I tell you, China is the biggest bubble I have ever seen, and it's going to burst, and it's going to start bursting sometime next year.
Really? There's a lot to talk about there, but let me kind of go back to the tapering, since that's the one that's nearest term. All eyes are on the Fed now. It seems like Syria and that situation has died down now, and they're refocusing now on the Fed meeting next week. Do you think, and there's a lot of argument out there, I was reading this morning that some folks think that the Fed's going to taper by $10 billion, some think by $20 billion, some people think that the Fed's going to put off tapering and maybe do it as late as December. What do you think they're going to do, and how do you think they're going to get out of this whole thing?
Well, you know, it is hard for them to get out of it at this point. I think my guess would be they're going to taper by a small amount, $10 billion. They're going to do the minimum, and they're going to start. But you know the Fed, you know, they go in one direction and then they go in another. So once they start tapering, it's going to be hard for them to back off on that. And that's why the markets don't like it. And without tapering, I tell you, I mean, you know, people act like we have a sustainable recovery, Mike. This is the greatest BS I've ever seen. If you look at the reality, every 7 quarters, we see an expansion and then a downturn on this stimulus cycle. So you had that with QE1, and you know, the markets finally in the, you know, GDP finally came up, and then it went back down into 2011 to negative realms again. And then you had QE2, and again, GDP goes up for 3 or 4 quarters, and it goes back down. That's what it's doing now. I think GDP is going to get better in the third quarter, maybe the fourth quarter, 3% or a little higher, and then we're going to see another fall off because this economy cannot grow without massive stimulus. The demographic trends, as we've been predicting for 20 years, are pointing down into 2020 to 23. We got debt ratios higher, twice as high as in the roaring 20s in all countries around the world, and even higher in Japan and England and certain countries. The economy can't grow without stimulus. So if they do start to taper, the economy is going to slow. And once they start to taper, it's going to be hard for the Fed to turn around and say, oh, we were wrong and we got to go stimulate again. By the time they stimulate again in the first, second, third quarter next year, I think we're going to be going down. So I think the first quarter, second quarter next year, high risk for stocks, high risk for the economy.
Okay, now do you think it's going to be short lived? I mean, if you assume the market's going to start going down, you've made a lot of predictions. Well, not predictions necessarily, but you've discussed several times over the last couple of years about the market maybe even retracing the steps that it took in 2008. Of course, probably at a slower pace, not necessarily falling off the cliff. What do you see? When it starts going down, are we going to fall off the cliff? Are we going to go down that far, do you think?
Well, you know, it's a little bit hard to predict, Mike, because for the first time in history, governments around the world, especially the Fed, are saying we will not have a downturn. You know, it's called the Bernanke put, and before that it was called the Greenspan put, where the Fed just steps in. It will not let the market go down. Now, this is incredibly dangerous. They've done that now for decades. And the pattern I see is very simple. I mean, anybody can get a chart of the Dow Jones Industrials or the stock market and look at the same thing I'm looking at. Every peak in the market, like 2000, in 2007, and now 2013, early 2014, every peak has gone higher, and every crash, like 2002 and 2008 and 9, has gone lower. So, I mean, this is not hard to understand. It's like they call it the jaws of death. Every peak goes higher, every crash goes lower. So I'm expecting the Dow to go to 16,000 or a little higher by maybe January, give or take. And then I'm expecting in the next few years to follow that the Dow could go lower than it did last time to 5,800 to 6,000. That's a huge drop.
That is. That's 10,000 points. That's amazing.
Yeah. But again, this has happened over and over again, 87, 2000, 2007. You know, I get on CNBC and, you know, Maria Bartiromo goes like, "Well, Harry, how could that happen?" I'm like, "Maria, wake the heck up. This is what's happened for the last 20 years. Higher highs, lower lows, especially with massive stimulus."
Well, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'd like to talk to you a little bit about what's going to trigger that. I'd also like to talk to you. You wrote a great piece in your Survive and Prosper piece, Where Baby Boomers Will Spend Their Money Next. I'd love to talk to you about that. So stay with us, folks. We're talking to the world-famous Harry Dent. We'll be back to you in just a few moments.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
The bottom line, we've got the economist that I most admire in the world today with us, Mr. Harry Dent. He's a world-renowned economist. He, in my mind, is the foremost demographic-based economist in the world. He accurately predicted the 1992 recession. He foresaw the biggest bull run market in U.S. history, as well as Japan's lost decade, and even sounded early warnings about the 2008 financial crisis. So you need to pay attention when Harry talks. You really do. And so I guess just before the break, I tell you what, we got this break and the next one. Let's take one question on each one. So do you want to do Gabrielle's this time?
Yeah, Gabrielle, who was talking about, she was wondering basically the demographic impact of amnesty and what that might have on your demographic charting, because if Congress does legalize this, you know, 20-something million undocumented immigrants soon, you're going to see more and more as time goes by. And they're saying, oh, it's going to be good for business and construction because it's a younger workforce. And in the long run, it's going to help GDP. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, no question. The difference between U.S. and most European countries that are sinking today is our immigration. Immigrants come in young, between age 23 and 30 on average. They come into the workforce. They may make lower wages on average, but they climb faster than the average household. So immigration is a social issue, and I can understand people debating it's good or bad, but demographics, there's no question about it, it's good. Now, the problem that people already do not realize, illegal immigrants are already running back across the border. They are moving out of the country is faster than immigrants are moving in from Mexico legal, and if we do not stop this, we're going to have net negative immigration from Mexico pretty soon. It's already about zero right now, and it is going to hurt our economy, no question about it. The same thing is happening in Spain. They had a big real estate bubble, a big construction bubble in Spain and Europe, and when the bubble burst, the same thing. The immigrants from North Africa went back home. They left the country. And I'll tell you, the next thing that's going to happen, the biggest surprise in the next decade, is that hundreds of millions of migrants from rural areas in China into the cities, who are not considered citizens by China and the cities, do not have benefits on health care, education, social benefit. They're going to run back to the rural areas after China's already overbuilt their cities by 20 to 30%. It's going to be the biggest exodus in history. So migration and immigration is a huge factor in demographics, and we're going to suffer the negative side after positive immigration, especially into places like Texas, for many years. And China is going to be perhaps the biggest urban disaster in history.
Wow!
Wow! And you were saying that because there, all those people that have moved to the cities are going to move away.
Yeah, I mean, people don't understand that China has shoved hundreds of millions of people, low skilled people, no skills, into cities, into high rises, and then they give them jobs building the very high rises they've moved them into, and then hope they're going to have export jobs. I mean, for manufacturing in the future. Well, these exports, through China's 35 to 40% of their economy's exports, that's slowing down, especially with commodity prices going down around the world, something we predicted, like the downturn in demographics, you know, decades ago, that commodity prices are going to go down. It's going to hurt emerging countries. China exports most of their stuff to emerging countries. China's going to keep slowing. They have overbuilt industrial capacity by 30 to 50%. Houses are overbuilt in cities by 25 to 30%. Infrastructures, bridges to nowhere. If you think we got pork barrel, there's nothing to compare in China. And China, if these rural people who are not citizens and are shunned in cities, if they go back to rural areas where they actually own land and can survive in downturns, it's going to be a massive disaster for already overbuilt and overvalued real estate. China's got the most overvalued real estate ever. You know, more than California, more than Vancouver, more than London, more than any emerging country in the world, like Mumbai or Bangkok. China's got the most overvalued real estate ever. And people are thinking, oh, China can't go down. It can only grow. Well, that's what they said about real estate, you know, several years ago, and real estate finally started going down in the most overvalued cities in the U.S. So I tell you, China is the place to watch. It's it's going to have the biggest bubble burst ever. I study demographics. I study bubbles. China's going down.
Harry, speaking of real estate, we've got a question out of Colorado, out of our Denver area, from someone. They're planning on buying a house in the next 3 months because they don't want to rent. Do you still recommend a variable rate loan rather than a fixed rate because it seems like interest rates are headed up, not down? And should they get the largest loan amount that they can get?
Well, you know, first of all, especially tax deductible levels, I would get the largest loan I can get. It's not a good thing fundamentally, but it's a good thing you versus the bank. I think interest rates are going to continue up. Our forecast is that the 10-year Treasury bond rate is going to go up to about 3.5% to 4% in the next several months, the next 6 to 12 months. But ultimately, when we get another downturn like 2008-09, which I see coming in the next year or two, 2014 to 15 plus, I think rates are going to come back down because of deflationary tendencies. So yeah, I mean, first of all, I would not buy a house in Colorado. I'd rather rent for the next few years, let real estate go through another downturn. We saw the first downturn 2006 to 2009 or 10. It's come back modestly, you know, stronger in some areas than others. And the more it bubbled, the more it's bubbling back. And I would rather wait until 2015 or 16 and see if real estate goes down. I think real estate is going down lower in most areas, and I would rather not buy. But if I did buy, I would want to get a variable rate mortgage because I would want to be able to refinance it maybe 2-3 years from now at lower rates. And I think rates will go up at least a percentage point in the next year.
Now, if the market collapses, I mean, really goes down to the levels you're thinking. The last time it went down, 2008, kind of everything went down with it. Real estate typically is a non-correlated asset to the stock market, but when life gets really lousy, everything gets lousy, and people start selling because they've got to pay their bills and they get cash calls. Do you expect as big an impact on real estate this next time as the market goes down? A lot of markets are still down. For instance, Vegas, Phoenix, you know, they've not gotten anywhere near back to where they were, where we got a spot like New York, which seems to be covering very, very well. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, Mike, I mean, real estate is non-correlating in general, but when we see a deflationary downturn, when debt is deleveraging, like we saw in 2008 and 9, everything went down. Commodities, gold, silver, real estate, global stocks, emerging markets, U.S. stocks, small cap, large cap, everything went down. So I see that again. But real estate is the most regional. The more the real estate bubbles in markets, the more it goes down. Texas never got that big a hit.
Right.
You know, and some areas like London and New York and Vancouver never went down much. But I think real estate is going to go down again. And what I tell people is look at your real estate, whether it's commercial or residential. What was it worth in January of 2000? That's when the bubble started. That bubbles tend to go back to where they started or a little lower. And again, so that's what you look at. And so there's more downside risk in cities that have gone up more and less in places like Texas that have not gone up that much.
Okay. Larry, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get a copy of Survivor and Prosper? Let's do a little commercial here.
Yeah, you just go to www.harrydent.com, and we've got a free daily newsletter. A marketing firm talked me into this a year ago. I would have never thought it before. We have a daily free newsletter, everything we're thinking about, current events, new research, predictions, for free. And it's a great newsletter, great content, as you know, you get it. And again, it's free. I mean, people can just listen to us forever, and then when they decide they want to trade up to one of our bigger newsletters, they can do it. But they can listen to it free every day.
Right. And you have a new publication out entitled Spending Waves, The Scientific Key to Predicting Market Behavior for the Next 20 Years. What is that all about?
Yeah, you know, Mike, we've taken one of our greatest resources is the Bureau of Labor's Consumer Expenditure Survey. Our government, one of the good things they do, they survey thousands of households every year. So we know when people spend the most money on altogether on potato chips, on housing, cars, adult diapers, whatever. And so we've taken this research over 10 years of data where we have enough data to get down to things like potato chips. So we look at hundreds of areas of spending. So any business can say, oh, here's when tires peak. Here's when babysitting peaks or childcare. Here's where, you know, spending on anything peaks. So you can see these waves coming, especially with the baby boom and the echo boom to follow in any part of our economy and ultimately in any part of the country, because some areas are younger or older than others. So demographics is the most powerful trend driving our economy, and we've been known for 20 years now for predicting the booms and busts of our economy and places around the world like Japan to peak before us, and Europe that it's going to peak after us. People think Europe's in trouble today. They're going to be in much bigger trouble in the next 5 to 10 years with demographic trends. But we can do it down to potato chips, grocery stores, anything you want to predict, and that's what the Spending Waves book do. So you can go to harrydent.com/spendingwaves and get a look at this research report. It's unbelievable. It's never been available to people before like this.
And I highly recommend both, folks. I highly recommend you go to the website, pick up some of these pieces, and obviously sign up for Survive and Prosper. I get it every single day. It's a great piece. I look forward to it. And I was amazed, Harry, at what you wrote yesterday. And you talked about where to invest, where the baby boomers will spend their money next. Why don't we chat about that for a little bit? And because things are changing. The baby boomers, it looks like, are beginning to retire. You wrote actually a couple days ago, I think it was, you were writing about how those of us that are baby boomers, we're going to peak in our stock purchases between now and 2015. So life changes. So can you talk a little bit about where we're headed now?
Yeah, you know, I mean, the baby boom is still the largest generation in history. They're larger, when you count all the immigrants that came in, the baby boom is still larger than the echo boom that follows. And the baby boom, even though they're starting to slow in their spending, still have more income and spending than the younger generation to follow them. So the best way to make money in business and investments is to continue to follow the baby boom. What are they going to continue to spend money on after they peak? They already peaked in housing years ago. They're going to peak in automobiles in the next year or two. And automobiles are hot right now, especially luxury cars and large pickups and sports cars. Well, that's going to drop off. RVs, recreational vehicles, are the next big boom. That peaks around age 60 to 63. It's the retirement dream of the average family. Healthcare, wellness, weight loss is the hottest industry right now. You see it on commercials. Multi-level marketing firms are booming with this. Why? Because people weigh the most between age 55 and 60. Again, another demographic fact. So healthcare, vitamins, wellness, discretionary wealth, healthcare, things that people spend their own money on and are not going to be crimped by declining Medicare and Medicaid in the years ahead, because that's going to be a huge problem. Think of everything aging people do. They need landscaping. You know, they need handymen. In Japan right now, convenience stores and drug stores are hot, and grocery stores are declining. Hey, grocery stores are for the kids. They eat all the food. Older people, they need more adult diapers than baby diapers. They want to go down the street and get a few things to eat. They need their prescriptions. They don't want to go to a big department store or a big grocery store anymore. So you just think, what do people do as they age? You know what else they do? They travel. And after they travel overseas, they realize it's difficult, and they go to cruise ships. Cruise ships boom the most between age 60 and 70. So that's going to be a huge growth industry, even in a downward economy. So, again, just think, what do older people, if you're older, what do people like you do as they age? They don't spend more money on housing. They spend less and less. They don't drive their cars more because they don't have the kids to cart around. You know, they spend more money on things like health care and conveniences and all types of services. Old people don't want to mow their lawns. They don't want a bigger house. They want a townhouse in the city. You know, they want a vacation home, you know, somewhere nice or near their grandkids. So that's the type of things that are going to boom in the next decade. And most industries, cars, housing, et cetera, are going to go down.
Wow. So what are the places? You list 10 places. Here are 10 areas to invest in. Discretionary health care and wellness, nursing homes and assisted living facilities, health and life insurance, retirement and financial planning, home maintenance services, convenience and drug stores, pharmaceuticals and vitamins, urbans and townhomes, urban townhouses and condos, active retirement communities and vacation homes, and RVs. You think the RVs are really going to come back? I just have to. I always wanted an RV.
Oh, my God.
I mean, they're so expensive to run.
You know, Mike, one of my favorite jokes when I give speeches is that, you know, motorcycles, most of the motorcycles are bought between age 45 and 49. It's the midlife crisis of the average male in this country. The kids leave the nest, they go off to college or whatever, and now you got finally got discretionary income. You're not spending all the money on the kids to raise them and get them through college, and you get a sports car, you get a boat, you get a motorcycle. Well, that's the way RVs are. Most of the money on RVs is spent between age 55 and 63. It's what I call the redneck retirement dream. And so automobiles are going to dive about a year or two from now and start to decline, just like housing did many years ago. RVs are one of the most concentrated spending cycles in the United States. So that's going to be a huge boom. And I'm in Tampa. And we are at the center of RV land. If I travel towards Orlando, I just see giant lots of RVs. And these people are going to do incredibly well in the next decade.
Well, I'm 62. If I just kind of work my way through one more year, I'll get past it. I'll work my way through it. Listen, Harry, thank you so much for being with us today. It's just a pleasure to have you on every time, and we are grateful for your willingness to share with our listeners your knowledge. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and note, financial planning was one of the big areas.
Yep. Ah. Yep, and that, we're here for that.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.